Welcome to the deep dive. So today we're tackling something a listener actually brought to our attention, this persistent question of why the tech startup scene is, well, still so male dominated.
Right. And you shared that article by Sperber and Linder, which takes a really interesting angle on it.
Exactly, from the European Journal of Information Systems. And their point wasn't just about, the usual barriers. It was more about how the fact that it's male dominated kind of creates the expectation it should be.
Yeah, it's this idea that the reality itself shapes the norm, which then disadvantages women. It's quite a subtle mechanism.
So that's our mission for this deep dive. Unpack that self-referential loop in IT entrepreneurship. How does it actually work, and what does it mean for female founders?
And moving beyond just listing obstacles, looking at this reinforcing cycle.
Okay, let's set the scene first. The article confirms what we frankly already know. There's a big gender imbalance in IT, all the way from education up to who's running these new companies.
Oh, definitely. The stats they cite are pretty stark. They mention Crunchbase data, something like only 17% of IT startups have any women on the founding team.
Wow, only 17.
Yeah, and it gets even smaller later on. Drops to about 8% in later funding stages. And think about the big success stories, the unicorns.
Very few female founders there.
Extremely rare. And the history, Google, Apple, Microsoft, it's largely a story about male founders.
But here's where the article gets interesting. It doesn't just say imbalance equals disadvantage. It asks how the imbalance actually creates the disadvantage. That's the key, right?
Precisely. Because, people usually point to things like educational background or cultural stereotypes, maybe work-family conflicts.
The usual suspects.
Right. And those things are probably part of it, sure. But this research says, hold on, maybe it's not just a simple cause and effect. Maybe there's something more systemic going on.
So what is this different mechanism they're proposing? What's the core idea?
It revolves around this concept they call the normative force of the factual. Bit of a mouthful, but
Okay, break that down. Normative force of the factual.
basically, it means when something is a certain way for long enough, like IT being mostly male, that reality starts to feel like the way things should be. The is becomes the ought.
Ah, okay. So just seeing men in these roles constantly makes people unconsciously expect men in those roles.
Exactly. It shapes the perception of what's normal, what's typical, and then that perception starts to act like a rule, an expectation.
The article mentions someone called Jelinek in relation to this.
Yeah, Jelinek's idea helps explain how what's seen as normal or factual can gain this normative power in public perception. So if IT startups are overwhelmingly male,
Okay, then the unconscious thought becomes successful IT startups are male-led.
pretty much it becomes the default expectation, the implicit benchmark.
So the research really zooms in on this question. Why does the fact that IT startups are male-dominated turn into a requirement for people trying to start a career in IT?
That's the million-dollar question they're tackling. And they argue a big part of the answer involves the audiences.
Audiences. You mean like customers?
Primarily, in this context, the people who provide legitimacy and, crucially, resources. So, investors, VCs, the people who decide who gets funded.
Right, the gatekeepers.
Yeah.
Okay, how do they play into this cycle?
Well, these audiences develop mental models, or what the article calls prototypes, for what a successful IT startup or an IT entrepreneur looks like.
And because the reality is mostly male.
The prototype tends to be male too. Maybe unconsciously, maybe not, but that image gets baked in. Think of the stereotypical tech founder image.
Yeah, hoodie, maybe a bit nerdy, focused on disruptive tech. Usually a guy.
Exactly. So when investors are evaluating pitches, they're often comparing the founders and the startup against this prototype.
And if a team, especially one led by women, doesn't quite fit that picture.
They're seen as deviating from the norm. And that deviation can lead to penalties, less interest, less support, and ultimately less funding.
So fitting in or seeming similar to that prototype is key to getting legitimacy.
That's what the article strongly suggests. Legitimacy comes from meeting these collective expectations. These categories, these prototypes, they aren't just descriptive, they exert real pressure.
This ties into stereotypes then. The idea of entrepreneurship itself often being seen as masculine.
Yes, the research points that out. Investors might subconsciously associate entrepreneurship with traits often labeled masculine risk-taking, assertiveness, competitiveness.
And the tech founder stereotype we just mentioned, the rational, independent, tech-focused person.
Is also typically gendered male in popular imagination.
So how does this impact female founders when they walk into a pitch meeting?
They're often perceived, right from the start, as not quite fitting. Not necessarily because of their competence, you understand, but because they don't match the prevailing mental image. The article uses this phrase, entering a world not made for them.
That's quite stark. And it's not just behavior, is it? There was that uncomfortable point about physical appearance, too.
Yes, that was quite striking. While you can maybe adjust how you behave or pitch, your appearance is what it is, what it is. And they cited other research suggesting investors were actually more likely to fund pitches from men perceived as attractive.
Oof, that adds another layer.
It certainly does. And then there are other perceived associations, like women maybe being linked with less aggressive growth plans or being more risk-averse, whether that's true or not.
Which contrasts with that go-go-go high-risk prototype often valued by VCs.
Exactly. It all feeds into this mismatch with the dominant prototype.
Which brings us to what they specifically call the gender effect. What exactly is that?
So the gender effect, in their terms, is this pressure women face to conform to a male prototype that realistically they can't fully embody. Because they can't perfectly match it, they risk being seen as less capable or a poorer fit.
So it's not about actual ability, but about failing to match an often unconscious male-defined template for success.
Precisely. They're judged against a standard that's inherently biased by the existing male dominance.
Wow. Okay. And they had a hypothesis about when this effect might be strongest. Something about uncertainty.
Yes. Hypothesis one. The idea is that the more uncertain a startup's business model is, the less clear its path to success, the more investors will fall back on these prototypes.
Like a mental shortcut when the data is fuzzy.
Kind of. When objective measures are lacking, you rely more on pattern matching, on what looks like success based on past examples, which are mostly male. So uncertainty should amplify the negative impact of deviating from the male prototype.
And they tested this using blockchain startups. Why blockchain?
Two main reasons, really. First, blockchain was, and still is to some extent, a field with very high business model uncertainty. Lots of new ideas, not all proven.
Okay, that fits. And the second reason?
It's also a sector that was, and is, incredibly male-dominated, even more so perhaps than general IT. So it was a good place to see these dynamics potentially play out quite clearly.
Makes sense. What data did they use?
They pulled data from Crunchbase, looking at founders, who got funding, how much, what the business model seemed to be. They also looked at company websites, things like that.
And did the findings support that first hypothesis? Did uncertainty worsen the gender effect?
Largely, yes. They found that for blockchain startups with fuzzier business models, having female founders or more women on the team beyond a certain point did seem to negatively impact their ability to secure funding compared to similar male teams.
Interesting. You said beyond a certain point.
Yeah, there was a nuance. Having some female involvement, like one woman on a team, sometimes showed a slight positive effect initially, maybe linked to ideas about diversity boosting creativity.
Oh, okay. So a little diversity is good, but...
But as the proportion of women increased, especially in these uncertain ventures, that benefit disappeared and seemed to turn into a disadvantage, suggesting they were seen as deviating too far from the prototype.
That's complex. A kind of tolerance threshold for difference.
That seems to be the implication, yes. Very subtle.
Okay, what about later funding rounds? Does this disadvantage persist once a company has already got some initial backing? That was their second hypothesis, wasn't it?
Right. Hypothesis two. The thinking was, maybe once a female-led team gets that first round of funding, they've established some similarity, some legitimacy, so perhaps the negative gender effect disappears in later rounds.
Have they proved they can play the game, so to speak?
Something like that. So, does the prototype matter less once you're already in?
And what did the blockchain data show there?
Well, it showed that the specific negative gender effect linked to prototype deviation did seem to lessen or disappear in subsequent funding rounds.
Ah, so that's positive.
Partially. Because even though that specific effect weakened, female-founded teams still raised less money overall in later rounds compared to their male counterparts.
So even if they clear the first hurdle, there's still a gap.
Exactly. It suggests that while establishing that initial similarity helps overcome one barrier, there are likely other factors still creating disadvantages down the line. It's not a completely level playing field, even after initial success.
Which really reinforces that central idea, doesn't it? The self-referential nature of it all. The dominance itself creates the standard.
Absolutely. It's not just about overt bias or specific policies. It's how the existing structure, the sheer fact of male overrepresentation, shapes the rules of the game, consciously or unconsciously.
And it keeps itself going without anyone necessarily trying to exclude women. It's baked into the evaluation process.
That's the really crucial and maybe insidious part. It's driven by perception, categorization, and matching against these prototypes, not always by a deliberate intent to discriminate.
Okay, let's pivot to the so what. For listeners interested in practical takeaways, what implications or recommendations did Sperber and Linder draw from this?
Well, one quite counterintuitive point was about how female founders might approach things. They suggest that maybe the focus shouldn't only be on emphasizing uniqueness, especially early on.
Really? Because usually the advice is lean into your different perspective.
Right. But this research implies that the very first barrier is often being perceived as too dissimilar from the expected prototype.
Oh.
So initially, demonstrating sufficient similarity to be seen as a credible player within the existing framework might actually be more critical.
So project competence and fit within the expected IT entrepreneur mold first, before highlighting unique strengths.
That seems to be the implication for overcoming that initial legitimacy hurdle. It's tricky, though.
Definitely tricky. How do you even change the prototype itself, then? That seems like the real goal.
And they acknowledge that's hard, because prototypes are normative, based on perception, not just empirical facts you can easily update. But they do suggest one avenue. Looking at niche markets or areas on the periphery.
Places where the definition of IT startup might be fuzzier?
Exactly. Or where women might already be less underrepresented. Success in these areas could, over time, help establish alternative prototypes, broadening the overall definition of what success looks like in tech entrepreneurship.
Create new norms in less established spaces. Makes sense. What else?
They also had a caution about showcasing individual female success stories.
Oh, why is that? Isn't representation important?
It is, but they argue that if there are only a few high-profile examples, it can accidentally reinforce the male prototype as the norm, and these successful women just become seen as exceptions, the outliers.
Ah, the exception that proves the rule kind of thing.
Precisely. They suggest focusing on celebrating female success more when there's a critical mass, when it signals a real shift, rather than just highlighting anomalies.
Okay, and what about advice for women to, you know, act more like the male prototype, be more aggressive, talk the talk?
They explicitly warn against that. Trying too hard to mimic perceived male behaviors can backfire. Women risk being judged negatively for the same behaviors that might be accepted or even praised in men, seen as overly assertive, for instance.
The classic double bind.
Exactly. So simply telling women to act like men isn't the answer, and can actually be detrimental.
It's good they addressed that. Did they mention limitations or future research directions?
Yes, they were clear about that. They noted their study used a binary view of gender and called for research incorporating a wider spectrum of gender identities.
Important point.
Definitely. And also that their quantitative study shows net effects. But more qualitative work is needed. Interviews, observations to really get inside the heads of investors and understand how these categorization processes happen in detail.
Understanding the nuance of the perception.
Right. And they also suggested this whole normative force of the factual idea could apply much more broadly to issues of race, ethnicity, other areas where historical imbalances create self-perpetuating norms.
A potentially very powerful framework.
It seems so. Oh, and one final point they noted about their own data.
Yes.
In their sample of blockchain startups, they found teams with women, but not a single team founded only by women.
Wow. Which kind of illustrates the very problem they're studying, doesn't it?
Precisely. A stark reflection of the reality.
Okay, so wrapping this up for our listener, what's the absolute core message to take away from this deep dive into the Sperber and Linder research?
I think the biggest takeaway is that female underrepresentation in IT startups isn't just a pipeline problem or about overcoming specific hurdles. It's partly driven by a self-reinforcing cycle where male dominance creates the very definition of success, the prototype, which then disadvantages those who don't fit.
So the system itself, through these prototypes, perpetuates the imbalance, affecting funding and support, even if female founders are highly capable.
Exactly. It's less about individual barriers sometimes and more about challenging the deeply ingrained, often unconscious image of who an IT entrepreneur is supposed to be.
It really reframes the problem, moving beyond just fixing the women to fixing the system's perception.
That's a good way to put it. It requires looking critically at those taken-for-granted expectations.
Which leaves us with a final thought, maybe. Consider other fields you know, your workplace, your industry, even hobbies. Where else might this normative force of the factual be operating.
Yeah. Where might the simple fact of who is currently dominant be shaping the expectations and subtly disadvantaging others just because they don't fit the established normal?
What does normal look like and who decided that? Something to chew on.
Definitely food for thought. And thanks again to the listener for pointing us towards this really insightful piece of research.